Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. As we always do, we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, was the persecution of the Jews under Hitler something new?
It wasn't something new, Dean. Jewish people have known persecution for a long time. They're not the only ones, but probably the ones that have known it more consistently. What was new in terms of the Nazi era was that it was enormous in terms of its scope. It was a massive undertaking, which the world, for the most part, outside of Germany, was totally unaware of what was going on. Here's just a little bit of a intro to a book on the Holocaust. On a chilly morning of November 3rd, 1943, Nazi SS men and their collaborators rounded up Jews, and then it names three towns in Poland. They marched the men, women, and children to large pits. Then with loudspeakers blaring music to drown out the sounds of gunfire and scream, they shot 18,000 Jews to death. Proud of their day's work, the sadistic perpetrators call the atrocity, and then there's a German word which means in English, harvest festival. Well, that just gives you a feel. In fact, now they even say 6 million, which is it's just this huge number. It was probably understated because they're realizing that it was way more than 6 million people who were killed. During the Second World War, 6 million Jews, it says in the book, as well as other targeted groups such as Gypsies, Poles, the handicapped, and homosexuals, were systematically murdered by Adolf Hitler's Nazis and their collaborators. That incomprehensible number becomes all the more horrifying when it's broken down into the many individual atrocities which occurred almost daily from 1941 to 1945. And then just by way of example, it says on September 29 and 30, 2 days, 1941, in the Ukraine, 33,771 Jews were stripped naked, shot by automatic fire, and buried in a ravine. 3.5 million Jews died in the gas chambers of the Nazi 6 death camps in Poland. On August 23 and 24, 1942, 8,000 Jews, and then it names the town in Poland, were gassed. On June 20, 1943, 5,000 Jews from Amsterdam died at Auschwitz, and the brutality went on and on. In fact, they quote Winston Churchill, "There's no doubt that this is probably the greatest and most horrible crime ever committed in the history of the world." Well, you know, I'd say the most horrible was when God sent his own son, Jesus, but they're not even comparing the two. This is something that is almost incomprehensible. I look at it, and I've read probably now, I would guess, 15, 16 books on the Holocaust, because I feel, and maybe we'll get to this later, it's very important that I understand this as I think in terms of the book of Revelation.
There were many Christians in Germany and in other parts of Europe. Were there not many stories of believers sheltering Jews?
There are stories. They get less and less as time goes on, because if the Nazis found that someone had hidden Jews in their home, they would just take them out. There was no trial, anything. Line up the family, line up the Jewish people, shoot them all in the head, and that was that. So there was this awareness that if you did this, you were doing something that was very, very dangerous. The truth is, we have these wonderful stories of people like Corrie ten Boom. Corrie's sister paid with her life in the concentration camp. The father died in a concentration camp. You have Schindler's List, which is, again, a story that is very, very thrilling to hear. But those are all exceptions. And because they were exceptions, these people were honored by the Israeli government as to the role that they played. But the truth is, Jewish people were not only rejected by the population of those countries, for whatever reason, they tried to flee Germany, and they were rejected by countries. Countries would not let them in. They would turn the boats away, send them back. So it was the whole world, for the most part, including the United States in many ways, which said, we do not want these people. So it's a part of our history and a part of the history of the world, of which everyone is kind of ashamed, but it could happen again.
How were the Nazis able to kill so many people?
Part of what they did, Dean, is they spread a culture of lies. They were bold-faced liars in every way you can imagine. One of the ways they tricked people, they put them in camps, and then they cut off all kind of outside communication. They couldn't have newspapers, they couldn't have radios, you know, they didn't have opportunity to talk with anyone. So the communication channels were blocked. And then they would say to the people, we're going to send you to a place where you'll be treated better you'll be divided some, but you'll have better jobs, you'll have better food, and then they would transport them to a death camp or to the gas chambers. When they went into the gas chambers, they didn't say, we're going to kill you now. They'd say, line up, you've had a rough railroad trip here, and I mean they were in cattle cars, they weren't in passenger cars, and we're going to give you showers. Fold your clothes very carefully and put them on the far bench so when you come out of the showers, you'll be able to find them easily and get dressed once again. Well, there was no intention whatsoever of them ever coming out of those showers because the poison came down and they died in there. But it was this lying, this constant lying, this constant saying, trust us, there's a better day ahead, and so on. And it was the whole situation was permeated with untruths. That's going to be the case when we come to the end times as well. There will be the massive lie that people buy into, not because they're dumb, it's just because they have lost the opportunity to be told by other people. Now, the more the war went on, there were Jewish people who escaped and began to tell what was happening. But even then, that was very limited compared to the massive scope of what was going on and what most people heard.
One would think that sooner or later the word would get out of what was happening, so there would be revolts of one kind or another.
There were revolts. There were a lot of revolts. They were not publicized because they were happening within the Nazi framework. So the Nazis aren't going to say about the revolts. And they were, there was huge retaliation when there was a revolt, even if the leaders weren't caught. They would line up and, you know, so again, it was not only an atmosphere of lying, but an atmosphere of fear, constant fear. What is going to happen? We don't know, you know, and then terrible, when they would shoot all these people, everyone would see it for the most part, so then they didn't want to revolt the next time. It did happen, and there are a lot of wonderful, heroic stories of Jewish people during that time. I'm not sure that even today we have a fair understanding because we think they just passively, like sheep to the slaughter, went to these situations. No, they were just like us, you know. Sooner or later, somebody's going to say, we're going to die anyway. Let's take our lives and use them at least in somewhat a positive way and stop this terror that is going on.
So how does an understanding of the Holocaust enable readers to grasp the scope of what the book of Revelation is all about?
My feeling is that Jesus, in a very wonderful way, is saying to us, I love you. The day is going to come when there will be a separating out between light and darkness. You won't have a choice. You'll either choose one or the other, and it's going to be a terrible time. You have to know that it's coming. You have to, in your mind, determine that you will be faithful, that you will endure these times, knowing that I'm coming back. You have that promise from me. But I don't think that the average Christian in America can even conceive of what is being described in the book of Revelation when the beast begins to take over and the false religion is there. And they say, you either succumb to what we're saying, you become a part of us, or it's the end of you. The only way you can even begin to appreciate that is through seeing what happened during the Holocaust, when we're talking millions of people, because of who they were, who were destroyed. They could be good or bad. It didn't make any difference. If you were a Jew, if you were a gypsy, you were a dead person. They could kill you in so many different ways. They could work you to death. They could put you on the death marches. They could do medical experimentations. You know, they did all the gas chambers. They could shoot you in the head. It just went on and on and on. We're talking about a day when it's not the Jews. In fact, I would say all of what happened under Hitler was demonic. The devil was behind what was going on. I know there were political things and militarily that was all involved, but the enemy was venting his wrath against Jewish people. That was a foretaste of what's going to happen in the end days, when the people of God are going to be the targeted people. And in that day, you could at least escape, maybe, if you were a professional like Albert Einstein and get to the United States. But it says this will be over the whole of the world, and there's no escape place. Then how do you survive during that time? And that's where Jesus is saying, it will come. The enemy will not win. You need to be faithful. You do not want to take the mark of the beast, and so on. But in order to even conceive of what is being talked about, you have to be able to get your mind around at least something like this that's happened in our history. And that's where the Holocaust comes in very importantly. And I look and I say, what if I had been a Jew during those days? What about my children? What about my grandchildren? You know, how would we be prepared for such a time? I look at it and I say, I can see it as clearly as it's stated in the book, what is going to come, and I don't think people are ready. So I encourage people. It's very hard. You go even to as basic a thing as the website and look up Holocaust and begin to read. You say, oh my, it was an awful, horrible time these people went through. And then realize that God is saying the day will come as well. Now, that's not only true for our day. It was true during the first century. You know, you go through the centuries, Christians time and time again have been the targets. There have been more Christian martyrs in this last century than all the centuries combined. We don't see it in America. We're naive about all these things. And it will come one more time when the enemy eventually has taken over the power militarily and politically of the world. And it looks like he's won the day, but he hasn't, because Jesus hasn't returned, and he will make fun and say, where is the promise? He's said this, you know, you look for, he never has come. But we have to live through all that. And, you know, you said you were 65, I think, this podcast or the last one. I'm 76. I've lived at a good time. I may still be alive when this begins to unfold. But I'm concerned because my children may be alive. I have 4 children, then I have 9 grandchildren, and one of them is a romance, and maybe we'll be married. I may have a grandchild. I'm thinking of those generations, and I'm thinking of the church saying, how do we realize that Jesus is giving us a message of be prepared? Don't let it take you by surprise. You have to think in terms of this, because that's how the world comes to an end. It doesn't just go on this wonderful time, you know, going to the ball game, eating out for dinner, whatever. It's not going to go on forever. It's not going on forever now in many parts of the world. The Christian church is paying the price, martyrdom, in numerous places. You have to be aware. It doesn't mean you just fall over and play dead, but it does mean you understand in your head the day in which you live. It's either going to be your generation or another generation. So learn to be strong. Don't be soft. Now, learn to take a stand. Don't have one foot in one camp, another in the other camp. You say, I am a Christian. You want to know who I am? I'm one of those who bows before Jesus. Get used to talking that way. Get used to thinking in terms of martyrdom and the excitement of being able to die for your faith. Other people in other countries are living that way. You know, they say, if I have to die, I'd rather die a martyr, because I strongly feel that the biggest thing in my life is Jesus. So anyway, that Holocaust becomes a very important understanding. A basic understanding of the Holocaust enables readers of Revelation to grasp the scope of what it's all about.
I hope that you've enjoyed this introduction to preaching the book of Revelation. And we've got more to come in the next podcast. We're thankful that you found us at our website, sermoncoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We also hope you're taking advantage of the resources we have there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. We hope you'll certainly join us again for our next sermoncoach.com podcast.